you seen that movie?
No.
Oh my God, it's terrible. It's like, you know, Babe Ruth was not a gigantic tub of lard, and John Goodman played him as one. There are many things wrong with that film.
All right, Bad Football Movies, Episode 7. We've survived this long. I'm excited about this. I'm Connor Orr, staff writer from Sports Illustrated. We have Mark Mravick, Bette Marston from Sports Illustrated in the studio today. We're watching A Necessary Roughness with Scott Bakula.
Necessary Roughness.
From 1991. Scott Bakula, Sinbad, Robert Loggia. This is Rob Schneider, Chris Berman, Jerry Rice, Evander Holyfield.
Yeah.
This is like an amazing all-star team. I mean, this is like a Pro Bowl roster.
it's going to be good. But this is for the first time. I think this is the first time that nobody's seen any of it.
Right.
Yeah. So we're all totally flying blind on this. And just to kind of let you guys into the process a little bit, we had gone into today's taping thinking that we might do a Disney movie from 1976 called Gus. In which an Eastern European family brings over a field goal kicking mule, right from like, wasn't it from like Yugoslavia or something?
Something like that.
No longer even exists, a former Yugoslavia.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I don't know, but I was excited for Gus.
I don't know.
One day we'll do it.
As a ethnic Serb, I was offended by the concept. So,
so instead,
we'll do Gus. We'll do Gus down the road.
Instead. The tale of Scott Bakula being invited back to his alma mater 17 years after something happens and he washes out of college, ragtag group of people, sort of a combination, I think, of like five football movies that came after it. So really sort of the genesis of, well, it's got a longest yard component because there's a jailhouse football team involved. It's got the ragtag guys where you drag the handsome quarterback out of obscurity. So there's the replacements. Sort of a really foundational movie for a lot of bad football movies to come.
I'm eager to see it because it's universally panned, unlike a lot of the other movies we've been through. This one, no one seems to think is good. So, but a lot of people have called for it on social media. Mm-hmm. So here we go.
It has 6.1 out of 10 stars on IMDb.
Very liberal. It's like Yelp ratings, you know.
Yeah.
If anything under 4 is you're going to get botulism. Don't go there. You know? So,
it's true. I've seen Applebee's above 4.
Yeah.
So.
Come on. Yeah. So don't go by ratings.
The new beer that we're bringing into the fold today is Magnify Brewing Patisserie. Breakfast IPA. I maintain that nobody does interesting release breakfast IPAs like Magnify in Fairfield, New Jersey. Very lucky to live 20 minutes away from this place. So
I don't even know what do you drink it for breakfast? Is that the idea, or do you sort of? I don't know. What is it?
It sounds to me like a genre of the IPA. Like there's certain components to it. Like this is brewed with lactose. So that kind of brings it into the breakfast IPA category, but I like the fact that it invites me to drink it for breakfast. It just says like it's okay it just makes it okay because it's a breakfast beer. So
but it's an 8.0, so I'm holding off on that until like halfway through the movie.
I'm getting right into it because we got Sinbad, we got Scott Bakula. We're gonna need to be a little toasty here from the beginning.
I'm on the session in the IPA from Double Nickel. This is really good.
Yeah. Double Nickel was great last week, so thanks again to them too. And thank you guys for listening. So we'll check in here a couple minutes into Necessary Roughness. I would say after 18 minutes of this movie. Wow. Like, it is by far the worst football movie we've ever seen.
Well, let's give it some time. I mean, we got another hour and 30 minutes.
Oh, God.
It's slow. Oh, my God.
The
it's
dialogue
like,
is terrible.
So I'm assuming that most of you guys have not seen Necessary Roughness. The plot of this movie, it's based on the SMU scandal in the 1980s where the program got the death penalty. Instead, it's Texas State, the Armadillos. And
The fighting armadillos.
Go Armadillos.
They flatten the program. They fire everybody. They kick out all the players. And... former U.S. Senator Fred Thompson, who is in this movie as
Texas. Before he was a U.S. Senator,
yeah.
he was apparently the president of Texas State.
And he goes to ESPN to find Don Straight Arrow Gennaro, the only coach in NCAA history who fielded a Cotton Bowl winning team after having kicked out all the players on his team for taking money from boosters, and Don Straight Arrow Gennaro is the hotel lobby guy from Pretty Woman and the fixer from the Princess Diaries. So.
Hector Elizondo, who is he's not good in this, as far as from I mean, he's not gone off to a hot start, but he's good in other things. I don't know. Let's see what happens. He's from my block, as I mentioned earlier. He was on some awards show and he said, "Shout out to 107th Street between Amsterdam and Broadway in New York, where I grew up." I'm like, I'm sitting in my apartment on 107th Street between Amsterdam and Broadway. I'm like, all right. So we're brothers. So that's so
you're giving him a chance. You're giving him a chance.
Yes.
Bet, what's your first take on this?
I'm just a little confused by some of the details. This is also the second movie in a row that we've watched where they've been open tryouts, and they fielded, they already have a full team, and which I guess whatever makes sense. But there's just a lot of things where I don't know. I hope there's storylines that either pan out, or also I was very confused as to why they had their tryouts inside a basketball gym.
Yeah, what was that?
Instead
all
of out on a football field, they were doing stadium stairs on like the.
The bleachers
inside a traditional basketball.
Would you only get like it's a small school, so you get like five steps and then you're done.
Yeah, like they have this nice football field, or you know what looks to be a nice football field, and I don't know why they weren't using it. So
the turning point here, at least of the first 20 minutes, is that Scott Bakula was this phenomenal high school player, one of the best prospects we've ever seen, a young Andrew Luck, and then decided to just be a farmer instead of going to college. And right. So he has all of his eligibility. In this movie, to me, he looks 37 ish. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like right? Probably.
Late 30s.
But he has all of his eligibility. The university trying to do this all above board drives to this farm in Texas. Robert Loggia drives to this farm in Texas.
Actor in almost anything
except for this.
I'm not gonna say could get better, honest.
And convinces Scott Bakula to join the team. One thing that we've picked up on since we've now been watching a lot of bad football movies is this trope where the quarterback comes in and throws the ball so hard that it knocks a teammate over, and all the coaches are like, "Yeah, that's what we need." But like, why would you want that to happen on a consistent basis? Like, we want a guy who throws the ball so hard that no one can catch it. You know,
he's been throwing the ball so hard because apparently either morning or evening, it's unclear.
Either dawn or dusk.
He drives his tractor out into the field where he has like a scarecrow with like a football uniform on it, and he runs plays and he hits the thing with the every time he nails the scarecrow and knocks the scarecrow over. So that's, you know, we know he's got a good arm still.
But the scarecrow's on a spring, so it pops right back up, and it just, you know. Yeah. Anyway, right. Whatever it was.
I wasn't paying that much attention.
I was paying very close attention.
I had to ask. It was like 10 minutes in, and I just had to ask, is this a comedy? It's slow, and the music is terrible. It's like Bill Conti, who wrote the Rocky theme.
Yeah.
Did the music for this movie, and it sounds terrible. It's droning, and it sounds like bad background music at the mall. It's not good.
There's a lot of like really bad, gritty football jokes told by bad actors. It's like, he stinks at two spots, or like he's and it's all like very bad dialogue. One indication to me of how not good this movie is early on is that all of you at least once, and Mark I think twice, asked me what Fred Thompson's role is in this movie within the first 10 minutes. Like he comes on the screen and they're like, the president of Texas State University. 2 seconds later, what's Fred Thompson doing here? 5 minutes later, why is Fred Thompson in this movie? 8 minutes later, what is his role with the university? So Necessary Roughness. You got to grab us a little bit, and you got to bring us some Sinbad. Maybe that's going to get this.
I think it's got. I mean, looking at the lineup here, they've got like numerous NFL Pro Football Hall of Famers are in this film, and Sinbad. So, I think it's going to pick up. But just so one thing I have to note, it's like you mentioned the dialogue, Ben. It's like some of the other movies we've seen. It's like the dialogue is not. It's not, you can't place it, but this is like really dated and dating itself. There's a line. There's some kind of like army veteran, like overeager army veteran who's trying to drill all the new players, and they're ignoring him. And he turns and he says, they didn't have this many deserters in the Republican Guard. Which, like, do you guys even know what the Republican Guard is?
I do not know.
That's the Iranian, like, elite forces in their first Gulf War in 1991.
Oh, there we go.
So okay. This guy's like a Gulf War. I mean, that's just. And Edward, they met Edward Scissorhands, like the receivers, like Edward Scissorhands, was just like, I mean, people.
Would that
know
movie
that,
have come out around then, 1991?
Yeah.
Probably, but yeah. I don't know. This is. And so, so at one point, like, somebody says, so Scott Bakula walks through the dorm and everybody's like 18 years old and they're all making these jokes about how old he is. And then somebody says, hey, respect your elders. And his roommate says this. Like, I was taught to respect my elders. And Scott Bakula says, I'm not that eld. I mean...
My other favorite part of this movie, so not to spoil anything for you guys, but this is the height of Kathy Ireland supermodel power, the record-setting Sports Illustrated cover streak that she was on during Swimsuit Issue. She at some point appears in this movie, but there is a scene where Scott Bakula steps out of his rustic Jeep Wrangler, but you see like the two cowboy boots land first, and Mark says, oh, this must be Kathy Ireland. it's just a very frail looking Scott Bakula. I will say this though.
I was just hoping like
something
to brighten this movie up a little bit. Come on.
I will say that is the best part of watching football movies from a different era. And we didn't really get a feel for this because we did Invincible last week with Mark Wahlberg. And Mark Wahlberg was not 70s jacked. He was 2006.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I said, he kind of came out of like Gold's Gym in Hollywood.
Yeah. It's like, you're coming in here to play this very specific role. You need to have big biceps.
Yeah. But this one, everybody is late 80s, 90s jacked, where we don't really know a lot.
Not jacked.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, I guess our hope is right. I mean, we got a lot to come. We got Kathy Ireland to come. We've got Jerry Rice. We've got Evander Holyfield. Sinbad. So something's got to grease the wheels
here.
This is peak Sinbad.
Come on,
let's
pick it up.
Let's go.
Schmooze? What was it? Schmooze the news? That's like what they call this journalism 101 class, which is like the cake class that all the football players have been taking forever. But he's met his match in Dr. Carter. the love interest and teacher of the journalism class.
Harvard graduate and former hard-hitting Washington Post reporter.
Yeah, apparently. And also victim of sexual harassment from the dean.
From the dean.
Oh, God. There's a lot going on here, right?
They met each other in the gym at the beginning, right?
She was playing racquetball.
She was playing racquetball. And they also talked in what looked to be like the gym cafe afterwards that was serving what appeared to be hamburgers and french fries. And I had to laugh at that because that would, we are. They definitely had like ketchup and mustard things on the table though. So,
I mean, they lost, right? They lost 65-0 in their first game, but we did get a little bit of Sinbad. And so we're starting to see
learned who Sinbad is in this. Like, so he's a vegetarian astrophysicist grad student. He's basically Neil deGrasse Tyson in this movie.
He is.
Yeah. So he's a grad student who had a choice between continuing to play football or earning his degree, and he dropped football to continue his degree. And so he's teaching the astronomy class
at Celestial Mechanics.
Celestial Mechanics. Because Scott Bakula is taking it because when he was a farmer, he would look up into the night sky and just ponder his existence. And so Scott Bakula is recruiting him because, of course, he has some eligibility left. So we're gonna have now two experienced football players on the Armadillos.
For a university worried about subverting the rules, this all seems very below board.
There's a lot of eligibility issues going on here.
It's like they're like BYU in the early 90s. They just have like 100 like 30 to 35-year-old men just pushing people around.
They have a Samoan, which is another BYU thing, right?
It's also we're unclear of the timeline. Like, we don't know where they are, because there was one point where before their first game, during one of the practices, the dean came in and said, or the president, someone came in and said, you can't have this player, his GPA is too low. But we were thinking, okay, this appears to be preseason practice. They haven't had any games yet. So how is the GPA too low?
They haven't even had classes
yet. Yeah, when did classes start? Like, classes hadn't started. We saw the first Journalism 101 and the first Celestial Mechanic, whatever it was, celestial astrophysics. The astronomy class that he's taking. And so it's like maybe the practices were in the spring and now it's the fall. It's not clear we don't know.
Not
we
clear
don't know
what's going on there.
You know what's interesting is I was thinking about this watching the first game. The Armadillos lose, and you know, through practice, I think something that's going to come back into play later on is, again, fast wide receiver who can't catch the football.
Featherstone. Mm-hmm.
Where did that start? Because that is in every movie. That is in The Replacements. That is in Little Giants. That is in every single football movie where a ragtag group of people come together. There is the fast wide receiver who can't catch. That is like every single football movie.
I mean, the original fast wide receiver was Bob Hayes, who was, I mean, he won the gold medal 100 meters in the 1964 Olympics. Joins the Cowboys and becomes a Hall of Fame wide receiver. He could catch, you know? Where do they get the idea that these guys can't catch?
It's also a very stereotypical position to put a fast guy. Like, why not make him, you know, why not make him play cornerback or something? It's like a coach's first thought to think, oh, he's going to be our wide receiver.
Because he's fast.
He's fast, but, like, put him somewhere else if he can't catch the ball, so.
I was very proud of myself. I was sitting there, and like while everybody else was absorbing the movie, I was thinking to myself, like we were trying to pick up on the random cameos. A very, very young Jason Bateman, like a 19-year-old Jason Bateman,
college age,
is in this movie sans his like kind of trademark sass. But then I was sitting there, and there's this Australian player who's sort of like the ultimate tough guy on the team. He's
no pads.
Yeah, he doesn't wear pads.
No helmet.
Horrible Australian accent, and I'm thinking to myself, where have I seen this guy before? All of a sudden, it comes to me. This is Lewis Mandalore, who is the brother on My Big Fat Greek Wedding. He's the guy who's like, I want to be an artist, but my dad won't let me draw the pictures on the menu.
Oh, he wasn't Australian in that?
Well, he's Greek. No. He's Greek, My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Right. he's like a very large, handsome Greek man, you know. But so he's not a convincing Australian.
Oh. I got to call out the Prissy Dean, who we thought at first was like
Larry Miller,
who's, I mean, he's in everything. I mostly know him from doing stand up on Letterman, but he's like one of these guys who shows up in a million things. And so he comes in and cuts all these players because they haven't made grade, and the coach says, how am I gonna field a football team? And he says, I don't want a football team. Mm-hmm. So he's clearly, he's set up as a villain. And mm-hmm. I take issue with that because Robert Maynard Hutchins was the president of the University of Chicago in the 1930s, and they were a Big Ten team, and they had won the first 8 Big Ten championships and all that stuff. And in the 30s, he decided to pull back from football because he thought that football was the mission of the university was not to play sports, big time sports, and the mission of the university.
He's about 100 years ahead of his time. Yeah.
He was. And he gave up football. He famously said, "When I feel the urge to exercise, I lay down until it passes." So, University of Chicago dropped football in the 40s, and they picked it up again as a Division III school later. So, our hero Robert Maynard Hutchins is not being depicted well by this movie. he hits on the journalism professor too in a very sleazy way. He called it out. What was it? The
sort of a Matt Lauer desk situation there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's repulsive.
Yeah. Not great.
I think the only other thing that I had a huge problem with was like at the beginning, the coach who I just can't escape him from Princess Diaries, like
Hector Elizondo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hector Elizondo. Like I keep thinking of him like showing her around Genovia, Anne Hathaway. But he calls the same play 3 times to start the game. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work the first time. It doesn't work the second time. Scott Bakula's like, screw this. I'm a hot farmer with a cannon arm.
Sprinter wide out.
And a fast wide receiver. He throws a bomb. And then gets benched for the rest of the game.
They put Popke back in, who his first play, he hides behind the the back judge and tells him to blow the whistle. Oh my God!
I don't know. I would say so far, I don't think this is like Siskel and Ebert level criticism here, but this is sort of rudderless at this point still.
A lot of bad dialogue too. So
we all had our first chuckle, though. We all had our first chuckle.
What happened? So the armadillos are playing defense, and the other team sends a man in motion, and everybody follows the man in motion, and they have a guy. All right, it was a little bit of funny visual humor.
Bette and I both laughed at Rob Schneider as the play-by-play announcer.
Oh, yeah.
And he said that Scott Bakula is the only player on the team alive when the Beatles are still together. But it's like such a bit, like, yeah, I think
terrible.
It was just out of pity you laughed.
Yeah, laughter out of like, this is awful. Yeah, like, God.
I think you were like just relieved that there was like some tiny little thing.
Like, that's really a line that
there was
said.
Terrible line for you. Okay, so they're all getting ready for the first game. They have 17 players because all these guys have been cut from the team for not making grade. And the other team is 119, and their coaches are talking, one guy says, we're going to get killed. And then Robert Loggia says, or one of them says, at least we have home field advantage. And the other guy says, the Alamo was home field. I mean, come on. It's terrible. Terrible. There's also this, continuing the incredibly dated like references. So the Gulf War veteran. He's also a martial arts expert or something. He opens his locker and he's got like these pictures of Norman Schwarzkopf, the general, the commander of Operation Desert Storm
like bumper sticker in his locker.
He's got like what is
confusing.
It? It's like a Samad, Saddam. This scuds for you. Mm. I mean, holy cow! Is this movie?
It's very clearly an early '90s movie.
Little did they know how happy he must have been. We got him a few years later, huh?
It was a long time later, wasn't it?
It's just...
Bring on Kathy Ireland, please. Come on.
However, I will say, we got Mark's first moment of turning after we had Sinbad come on for the first time.
Yeah.
Right. Mark said, all right, this movie's getting better, something along those lines.
That's true.
I also just popped open the nice birdie fairway ale. So
I was criticized initially for bringing 8% beers, but it has become very clear 45 minutes into this movie that it's absolutely necessary. So
this next hour is going to be tough.
Let me see. Anything else here? I don't know. It's just... Oh, boy. Okay. Yeah. Should be reporting this.
Yeah.
Ben Davidson. Dick Butkus. All right, here we go.
About these guys. Got a funny feeling about this.
Tony Dorsett.
Dealing with real sportsmen.
Real sportsmen.
That's Ed Too Tall Jones.
How do you do?
There we go. All
right. We got some faces and names in here now. All right. Oh, Herschel Walker. Oh, yeah. That's a Roger Craig. All right. There's some star power now. Okay.
This is your home. So, yeah, I right after our last break here, the dean who hates football and is sexually harassing his journalism professor,
Robert Maynard Hutchins,
has now, I guess in an effort to further discourage the team, has brought in people, quote, from another state institution to scrimmage with that turns out to be the Texas State Penitentiary. And the Texas State Penitentiary is loaded with great football players.
Oh, my God. This is a heck of a team. Oh, look at that.
Mark has literally cheered as every one of these players has stepped off the bus.
Theoretically, if we're following their logic.
We haven't gotten Kathy Ireland yet, but we got Dick Butkus and Herschel Walker. Come on.
Jerry Rice.
If we're following their logic, all of these guys still have eligibility, probably have college eligibility. So maybe they're all going to end up on the team.
All right. Who knows?
And she's probably pissed because he doesn't remember her.
Oh, come on. This is just...
That deserves, like, we're accused a lot on this podcast of being, like, too politically correct.
Right.
But, like,
right.
The journalism professor.
Washington Post, like, veteran, Harvard graduate.
/ Scott Bakula's love interest in this movie is, like, theoretically, like, one of the best journalists of your time, right?
Yeah.
You know? And now it's like Scott Bakula has gotten into a bar fight. And does what, it's like, we were just talking about this. In every football movie,
Sports movie.
In every sports movie, the protagonist shows up at the skeptical love interest door after a fight or a particularly bloody game for some reason. Yep. Like, why is that? Like, what
shows up bleeding? Like, no desire to wash your face off.
He's vulnerable, and he has to go, and she sees him at his most vulnerable, and instead of with this facade of like an athlete, she sees him as a person. Right? That's I think what happens.
But like from a sanitary perspective, like, he's a bleeding person.
I think is this also a mother, like a mother thing where he's mom, I'm cut, please heal me, you know? Maybe that's part of it.
It's playing into
there's a Freudian like Oedipal thing going on here. Whoa. Oh, okay. We found something in this movie that's worth talking about. Cool.
It's a very stereotypical female role of coming in to take care and like put the Band-Aid on and dabbing it with a swab.
And healing his wounds and healing his broken soul.
And his broken ego.
But so this is the problem here. There's a million
one
problems.
Of a few problems.
So they're having this conversation. So they meet and they've had this bad like sort of meet uncute thing that happened, and now like they're starting fresh, so they say, okay, let's start fresh here, who are you? And he says, I'm Paul Blake, freshman quarterback. And she introduces herself as like whatever her name is, Carter, cheerleader for the whatever it was
in 1975
Hillside
summer
Hillside High in 1976, and you beat us 42-7 and you threw for 348 yards, and she can't just be a journalist and just be a professor, she also has to be a cheerleader, you know, come on.
A cheerleader who cheered for one of his high school games when he, in theory, was back this, you know.
She cheered for the opposing team when he beat their team.
I don't think any of them have hit me as deep as this one, because it's just like, you know, we're all journalists theoretically, and we don't have time to do anything, you know. never mind,
I don't schmooze the news at the University of Chicago.
Never mind tend to a bleeding Scott Bakula at my door. Like, this lady's like, I got 13 dumb people's papers to grade.
I'm theoretically a national, like, this archaic laptop. Oh my god, great. Look at that. It was like from the Smithsonian. That's cool.
She's like a national correspondent for the Washington Post. She's probably deep into some Gulf War stuff going on. Like,
she's like Agent Orange. What was he, the deuterium, the deleting uranium weaponry that we use there, one of those things.
And then instead it's like, oh, the guy from Quantum Leap's here, so, you know, better just, you know,
drop everything,
better drop
and take care of him right now.
Depleted uranium, that's what we use on the coated our like bullets with and stuff. And it was like supposedly a cancer agent, so that's probably what she was working on when Scott Bakula walked in and said, can you put a Band-Aid on my boo-boo?
In my heart.
It's like, oh yeah, hold on, Scott. I'm just on the phone with the Secretary of Defense. You know. Oh, but you guys have a game this weekend. So excited!
Let me tend to you first.
So,
God.
So the best part of this movie, and the only good part so far, is when the prisoners play. The prisoners come in,
and then it's over. It just ended.
It lasted like 3 minutes. We were all excited for all of these cameos by these amazing football players, and it was good. They had like the classic, we're gonna just destroy you, and it was good.
Super young Jerry Rice.
Very young Jerry Rice.
Jim Kelly was the quarterback, and then Ben Davidson. So Ben Davidson crushes this guy, and he says, and the guy's, was it Scott Bakula? I don't know. It's like they're face to face.
I think Jason Bateman asked him.
Face guard, face mask to face mask. Jason Bateman looks up, and Ben Davidson, the famous Oakland Raiders tough guy, says, what are you in for? He says, computer fraud. That was funny.
That was good.
I'll give him that one.
So, yeah, I don't know. Even though it is a frequent criticism of this podcast, had to cut in there because, I don't know, that one touched a room of journalists just a little bit too deep.
I don't know. Can I just bring up one more thing?
Yeah.
This is the other terrible trope in sports movies, especially football movies, where the PA announcer at the stadium is doing play by play in the stadium. Oh, they're going long, and it doesn't happen. They just call like the number, they call the play, they give down and distance, and that's it. But these movies have to tell you what's happening, so they always have to have the play by play guy, Rob Schneider, who even did his like SNL copy machine.
He was
bit.
Doing that.
Oh God, oh,
making
God.
Copies.
Making regulator.
A I will say that our
maybe it was funny in 1991.
It might have been. Our high school football announcer did do play by play.
Really?
Over the PA.
Were you guys like part of a feature film or something?
No, it was just very bad.
Directed by Stan Dragotti. He's the director of this movie.
No, his thing was always but he never deviated. Like there was no flavor in it, and he would always say he was from Florida. We hired him to come up for the season, the fall, to do our games, and he didn't get to know anyone on the roster. And so every time there was a tackle, he would just say like the running back tackled by a host of comets, and like, but when you're there, you want to hear your name called over the PA system. You're like, girlfriend's here. Connor, come on, just say it one time. You know,
maybe he
God
said
sake.
The Connor-nator.
Making copies.
There was also maybe a Kathy Ireland signing. I thought I peeped her in the aerobics like class. I thought.
Mark is very excited to
I'm
find
not excited.
Kathy
I just, I mean, if she's in the movie, clearly. I just like it's something at least to anticipate.
Well, we're
are
still
supposed,
looking
supposed
for
to
her.
Ask us what we think is going to happen, right?
Oh, yeah. Let's make predictions.
Yeah, let's make some. This is a good time for some predictions.
They're like 0-7. They're not like winning, right?
Yeah, they so score points what, is, what is. So yeah, I think that's a good prediction for us to have. Okay, so they're 0-6.
Yeah.
They're not, this isn't like a Mud Dogs thing from the Waterboy where they actually go to a bowl game. They win a bunch of games. I feel like, because they said at the beginning, this is a 10-game season. So there's no way that they can have a winning season.
No.
So I theoretically, right, it would be the one win, right? You would win one game.
It's got to be the
last
game of the season. It all comes together.
Yeah, so predictions. All right, Bet, what's your prediction?
I think they're going to win the last game of the season, and journalism professor is going to be in the stands cheering him on. But I don't think they're going to have any kiss at the end.
Here's.
Huh.
What?
You don't think so?
No. I don't think so.
I think they're going to end up together.
Oh, I think she's going to rise above it and be like, you know what? Like, congratulations. I'm glad you won your game. Like, now let's go back.
Congratulations. No way. I'm being transferred to the Moscow Bureau of the Washington Post.
There's no way this movie's going to rise above anything.
I have a little bit of faith. You know what, Mark?
All right.
What's your prediction?
I got. Is it possible that Kathy Ireland is recruited to play on the team?
Oh,
right. And maybe she's like the wide receiver or something.
Oh, is she? Does she come in next to what's the wide receiver's name?
Featherstone
or something.
Right.
Featherstone.
So they got a two wideout thing now with Kathy Ireland and this like hurdler who they recruited. Mm. So maybe that's what happens. And so they win the last game, and then she publishes his game story from his journalism one.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Okay. Here's
that's
my prediction. And I will say I've only read the trivia section of IMDb, so I've not read anything into this. We come upon, because Mark just yells Kathy Ireland every time we see her. Like, we have not been introduced to Kathy Ireland yet, but every time she comes on the screen, Mark's like, Kathy Ireland! And so one of the times that we saw Kathy Ireland was in an aerobics class where everyone was doing...
It was her, right?
It was like a kicking motion.
Yeah.
And so maybe she's like the instructor of the aerobics class, and she's a kicker, because we saw earlier in the movie, right,
oh,
that the kicker kicks the ball right into the...
straight into the grass.
Chekhov's gun right there. Did I told you about
that,
right?
Wow.
I think that's what
with
it is.
Nitro will also happen. So the coach...
Mm-hmm. The coach has been eating.
Straight Arrow Gennaro has been taking nitroglycerin pills for a heart treatment and a heart condition. So something's going to happen where that's going to happen. Unless they leave Chekhov's gun unfired. Chekhov's gun is like this. It's Anton Chekhov wrote a book about, you know, playwriting. And it's like if you have a gun in the first scene, you got to fire it in the next one, right?
Yeah.
So like it's just nothing goes nothing
unanswered.
Goes wasted.
Yeah.
So my predictions then: Kathy Ireland comes in and moves the team along as kicker, so they have some functionality at the position there. Straight Arrow Gennaro gets a heart attack at like a very pivotal moment, whether it's like at halftime of like a big game or something like that. I think that unfortunately Scott Bakula and the journalism professor get together, and
I'm being shot down on that prediction.
I know, but like I'm rooting for you.
Movie.
I'm rooting
too
for
much
you.
Respect.
I'm rooting
like,
for you.
It is a bad movie.
For like, but if that was their mindset in the 90s, I don't think we'd have much to complain about right now. But unfortunately, I think that's where we're going. So all right, let's see what happens here.
Worse than we even thought.
Wow.
It's worse.
We're not out of the scene yet, but the journalism professor just admitted to Scott Bakula. She used to anonymously call his house.
Cut his picture out of the newspaper and used to call his house anonymously. It's much worse than we thought.
God.
They see Kathy Ireland.
Kathy Ireland is going to be the kicker.
She's the kicker. You got it, Connor.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow.
That literally was like 2 minutes.
That happened less 2 seconds after I predicted that.
Wow. Let's see. It's okay, hold on. Right? It's the aerobics class. It's her. Oh.
Yep, this is
She's a soccer player.
Oh, she's a soccer player. Okay.
She was in the aerobics class, though, because the soccer, maybe it was a soccer team, was exercising with the football team. Yes. We don't, here they are. Okay.
Wow.
Yes.
Told you.
There, you got it. You nailed it.
Kathy Ireland, the kicker.
Yes.
Your kicker of the Texas State Armadillos.
Awesome. Awesome.
Boom.
Oh, no. Kansas. Bad Kansas man.
Bad.
Oh, welcome to football, Kathy Ireland. Oh. Oh, the big Kansas dude, like, laid Kathy Ireland up. Oh, and she got him right in the groin. Yes.
Oh, good.
All right. Oh, my balls. Right.
We have a big guy flatten Kathy Ireland, and Kathy Ireland retaliated with the ball kick. It's got to be great.
Yes, exactly. Wow.
How is there still 45 minutes left in this movie?
Texas State ties Kansas 3-3.
Nitro time. Hector Lizardo is having a heart incident. Take the nitro pills.
I don't feel so good.
You knew this was coming.
Got it. Great feeling. I'm just going to record this because it's Scott Bakula and the journalism professor have hooked up. And she's acting very concerned about he's monologuing now about the pain of losing.
He said, I never lost a game in high school.
They work so hard, they don't deserve to go out losers.
Oh. She remembers his lead.
Wow. His extremely mediocre lead.
A terrible lead. I would have just cut that thing up and sent it back.
Try again.
He's not, is this a weird statement to make? He's not good looking enough to pull off the like grizzled.
Yeah, right.
You know,
he's not Dennis Quaid even.
He's not Dennis Quaid. He's not Keanu Reeves. He's not, you know, I'm thinking about all the bad football movie quarterbacks that we've gone through.
Dennis Quaid like 4 times, I think.
There's been a lot of Dennis Quaid. Not Jamie Foxx.
Right.
He's not the guy from Lost. Who's the quarterback in Draft Day?
The guy from Lost?
There's like a guy from Lost.
I didn't
play Brian Drew.
Oh. Just sit down. I want to talk to you. And yes, the Hector Elizondo did have like a heart ailment and had to take his nitro, and so we Chekhov's gun has been fired.
Mercifully, this movie is coming to a close. All right, one more prediction time. Now we're at the final. This seems to be like the apex of the movie.
Climactic scene, we like to call it sometimes.
Hector Elizondo. Hector Elizondo has taken a heart attack.
What is he called? Square Jerry? What is he? He's like Gennaro.
What's his name?
Straight Arrow Gennaro.
Right.
He's taken a heart attack. And so Texas State, they've won tie, but they haven't won a game. And a shirtless Scott Bakula recently explained to his journalism professor that...
like what, you did, right?
what a sentence.
Back in the day, Connor.
Yeah, like all of us did in college, that he doesn't want any of his teammates to go out as a loser. I feel like that's a little bit of foreshadowing. But so we've got Texas State against the Texas Colts. I guess the Texas.
The guys, these are the guys that they fought.
The people who they got in a bar fight with early in the episode.
The number one team in Texas.
The number one team in Texas. So I mean, I think we're all on the same page here. We're thinking win.
I think so.
How can they not?
They have to win.
Yeah.
So literally, the guy lied. Like Robert Loggia, who's now taking over the team, he's the coach. He gives his big locker room speech. He says, "I don't want to tell you guys, you know, what to do out there, but Hector Elizondo's last words were, 'Win or I'll die,'" which he didn't say.
I don't think he said that. Yeah.
No, yeah, unless that was off camera. I don't know. We did have there's like a series of like quick like moments in this movie. So the first kiss came at 109. Right, yep. And then we have male nudity at 110, and then an F bomb at 113, right? And then at 115, we're talking about like the Texas clock tower shooting. So that was an interesting little 6 minutes there. The kicker,
Kathy Ireland.
I forgot who she is already. She has to take a shower, and the big Samoan dude who's like taking her under his wing, and she's looking at him like a big brother, and he's looking at her like maybe not so much a big brother. And so she's also like takes the shower, and Connor's like, "Oh, they're not going to do this, are they?" With like she takes like this saucy shower scene, and it was just like it was about 1 second of like the water coming down.
Right, old... Do you remember the old Herbal Essences commercials?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. That was her thing. She definitely did shampoo commercials.
Yeah.
We're going to Google this later.
They
and find
hinted
out.
At it for a second, and then they steered it away real quickly.
Thank goodness.
Got a moment of it. Mark, do you think those were the best 6 minutes of the movie?
The convicts. I like the convicts part, and I liked that 6 minutes that was... That was okay. There was like it was rolling there. the prissy dean who's just despicable in this movie.
Right, such
Barry Miller,
despicable, right? So he confronts Scott Bakula and the professor, Dr. Carter. Is that her name?
Dr. Carter.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll call her.
And and she tells him we're consenting adults, and the dean says so were Bonnie and Clyde. I mean that's like the level.
Very strange,
writing in this movie. Oh my God, there was that Jason Bateman took on a big role, which was nice.
Jason Bateman became like a central character in this movie.
We were saying like maybe they discovered halfway through the movie that Jason Bateman is actually like a really good actor, and like we should probably get him more involved in the write a whole scene with Jason Bateman, please.
Maybe a little less Sinbad. We might have seriously overestimated the acting chops of Sinbad.
We never had too much Sinbad.
We also didn't like figure out until like I don't know. Maybe it was during that 1 minute and 1 hour and 10 minute thing where like the samurai martial arts guy and the Gulf War veteran were not the same character.
Very similar looking white men.
Totally similar. Well, one of them is
one just looks a little bit more like Paul Giamatti.
One is a Giamatti. Marcus Giamatti, is that his name?
Mark Giamatti,
yeah. Right.
But so they both just serve similar roles as being on this team.
Crazy sort of unpredictable guys.
Yeah.
So, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I think we sort of nailed it, but I don't know if you feel the same way. It's like they just had a general idea of a movie, and it seems like they've just sort of been... Just sort of making it happen as they go along.
Filling in the cracks and sort of just like plugging holes where they see fit. And
adding in storylines here and there and just making more characters important.
I did cheer when the woman, so the sleazy dean is trying to like screw the grades of the journalism students. Yeah, so that they can like, he can flunk out the team and she just says, "Up yours, Phil." And then he says, "She called me Phil," right? He got off on that. It was like so gross.
He loved it.
We have yet to determine, like the whole like, and this is something we probably should have gotten into a little earlier, but like we're almost at the end of this movie, and the whole time,
thankfully,
they've been being chased by the dean who's trying to shut the football program down. No reason why. Like, what is, like, is it financial?
He's correcting people's grammar. He's just like, he's like, does he not for like, whatever?
You know, is there a reason why he wants to shut the football program down? I don't know.
But there's, we must have missed something in those first like 5 minutes when they were on the ESPN set.
I feel like we did,
though. And the president came in and was like, hey, like, you can be our coach, blah, blah, blah.
He did give some long, impassioned speech about, like, you know, the mission of the university and the life of the mind and all that stuff. There was none of that there. Mm-hmm. He just seems like a jerk.
It's just like a clear villain that they needed a villain character to hate.
It's not even a guy you can hate really because he doesn't have any gravitas.
Very little gravitas. Okay, so I think we've all agreed on a win here for Texas State. We can see how it plays out, and I don't know. Probably like a last second
field goal.
I don't think it's gonna be Kathy. She did her thing. He's got to score. Scott Bakula has to
Scott Bakula's got to do something.
Right? He's going to throw a touchdown pass or score himself. I think that's what's going to happen. Unless the Samoan dude does
a slow-mo.
It's got to be slow-mo, right?
It could be like a precursor to Varsity Blues where Billy Bob scored the game-winning touchdown. He was like a larger man and they got him involved in the play. There's always a possibility there.
I'm rooting for this, like the samurai dude and Kathy Ireland to hook up because I think that would redeem this film because it's unexpected. I would love that to happen.
It is like you've been on this, yeah.
I want something in this movie to really surprise me and make me feel better about it.
What if Kathy Ireland catches the winning touchdown pass?
That would be okay.
You were so excited for her throughout this entire movie.
Kathy Ireland. Kathy Ireland.
She's okay.
Whatever.
She did her thing. She did her thing. No.
Here it is, guys. This is it.
All right, this is the final play. They're 1 point down. They can kick the extra point. And, of course, they're going to because Kathy Ireland's in. They're going to kick the extra point and tie the game. The big Samoan dude says they're not going to touch you. The Colts will be coming after the ball with everything they've got to try and block this kick. So, of course, he's going to overcommit. The villain on the Colts is going to overcommit, right?
He's seething.
He's going to roll out.
Scott Bakula is bleeding all over the place again.
Whoa! Who didn't see that?
Is Bet right? Is Kathy Ireland going to catch the game-winning score?
I think you're right. Featherstone's definitely not. He's double-covered. He would be crushed at this point in a real game. Is that her?
No.
Oh, yes! The Samoan dude is laying out the flat-top guy. Did you see that? They didn't even show it. It was the payoff. There it is.
Oh, here he comes.
No, it was nobody showed.
You got to throw it. You got to throw it, Scott.
Right.
Get rid of it!
Charlie Banks, is that Jason Bateman? Oh, back to the Scarecrow! Yes! He's going to hit that Scarecrow right in the numbers. And the Samoan dude takes out the bad guy. Oh, smush! There's like black ink coming out of his mouth. Oh, yes! 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 I can't believe I did! Who scored?
I think it was like a nondescript
He's
player.
He's the guy who didn't play?
Charlie,
I don't know. Let's go. Who? IMDb. Who was he?
The page off his helmet.
Who was it?
Oh, he's just like. It was the one guy left over from the team that had all the heart.
Oh, Popke, who never had another movie in his entire career. That guy's career was just that play.
Fitting then that he kind of just went out like
Rob
that. Then
Schneider is pouring champagne on himself. Hector Elizondo is shaking hands with Scott Bakula. We understand each other now, right? We're both in it to win it, but in a respectful way.
Jason Bateman and Sinbad
dancing with Jason Bateman.
Wow.
And the music
Gatorade. What color is the Gatorade?
The music sucks balls. I mean, the music is terrible. They had, like, last week a Stranglehold by Ted Nugent, and this is like... It's like, bet you're right. It's like the high school band.
The high school band's practicing.
It's like the high school band orchestra.
Scott Bakula twirling around his highly accomplished journalism professor.
She dreamed of this when she was in high school before she became a Harvard-educated Washington Post journalist.
Oh, they're going to get together, Mark.
Yes! I told you! She kissed him! They're going to... Yes! His heart. Oh, he needs some nitroglycerin. Oh, there might be more to this later. Unnecessary Roughness 2 is the story of Scott. Is the story of the big Samoan dude and Kathy Ireland.
Whoa, the armadillo pointing a gun at the car. Oh, yeah.
Oh, they wiped out the dean. Okay.
Wow.
Yes. Okay. It ended extremely predictably. But, you know, like I was saying last time, formulas sometimes work.
Featherstone doesn't even have a first name. It's just
Manu Mana by Peter Navi Tuasasopu. I was just wondering if he's like a member of that giant football Tuasasopu.
All the time players, Ed Tuchel Jones, Jim Kelly, J. Rice, Herschel Walker,
Randy White. Yeah, that was good.
Like,
I mean, the movie
it?
Wasn't good.
The movie was very bad.
The last scene, when everything that you predict happens, you know, there's a little bit of fulfillment there.
Yeah, I would say that was the best part, was just like knowing that, like, you know, being able to like read this movie like a book, was satisfying. But in 1991, I don't know. I mean, I was three, so I can't I can't really put myself in the times. But you know,
I mean, there's a reason why this movie has a bad reputation, and literally for like an hour and 2 minutes hour and 45 minutes. It was just very bland, and the writing is bad, the dialogue is bad, the acting is not great, and you know, there's weird stuff in there that's not really, you know, it's there's no like moments other than when the prisoners came in, and that's stuff where they we saw male nudity where there was anything to distinguish this film.
Yeah. There was really nothing to like. I mean, obviously you're rooting for this team, but at the same time you're not like, oh, like look at this arc they're having. You know, they're trying really hard here, and they're getting knocked down. And it was like, Connor, like you were, I think we were talking off mic. It was just like a bunch of people who were playing football together, and they all kind of had their own little things going on, and they came together literally on the football field. But that's
only like the last like even quarter of the season. That it all came together for them.
This reminds me of like when I turn in a story and like an editor reads it and it's like, and you think it's good, and then they're like, you didn't explain how any of this happens. Like, why is this? Why is that? And then you're like, oh shit.
And here's the difference between SI and the makers of this movie. We fix it.
We tell you what's wrong with your story.
Nobody there was like, you know.
Why you can't even tell the difference between these two guys, and this guy needs to be a better villain, and the love interest is not working at all, and whatever. Having seen like, I mean, so I was on like I was on the two previous podcasts with, you know.
You saw Invincible?
And Longest Yard.
Longest Yard. Like the payoffs in those movies, there was like a built up, and this just felt like a really low rent version of like the big football payoff. You knew it was coming, and it was like, okay, gratifying at the end, just because everything, you know, just because it's playing to that formula and you're kind of expecting it. So
I mean, this is what we do. We have to ask the question. I mean, this is called Bad Football Movies. Bad football movie, bet?
Yes, extremely bad. I don't know if I would watch this again, even if it was like on my TV on a Saturday afternoon.
Saturday afternoon, I don't know. It depends on like, okay, double nickel.
Yeah, IPA, how many beers have you had? Like
a nice birdie, and this was, what was this? This was the
patisserie.
Oh, that was good. With almonds, honey, and lactose.
There were like 9 minutes of like enjoyable movie here, and I gotta tell you, this is a really weird thing to say. The most disappointing thing to me in this movie was the music, that's like a really weird thing to say.
Yeah,
like Invincible was maybe the same exact movie, but with a killer soundtrack that made you like, it just juiced every scene. And this was like, you know, an Oscar-winning music director. And there's like nothing. It was like, it's like he sat in his backyard with a Casio recorder and just like recorded 2 hours of music. It's terrible.
It's just proof that like, you know, music can really help out the movie.
Absolutely.
And
the little things in these movies, like the casting and some of the acting and little tricks that they play with the characterizations.
I almost wish they had
a huge difference.
I almost wish they had run the script by someone else, like a joke,
anyone,
like a joke consultant.
Script doctor. There's like a whole industry in Hollywood of script doctors.
Yeah,
a friend of mine worked out there for a while. He's made $100,000 in 2 weeks. They
wow.
gave him a script for a movie. He's like, just fix this.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing. And they clearly didn't do this. Dialogue was just so bad.
Even
the jokes were so flat. Yeah. Oh, my God.
One-liners were awful. They were not exciting.
The worst joke in the whole movie. And it came at the end. Hector Elizondo has what he thinks is a heart attack. And it turns out, like, the doctor, he says to the doc, he's laying in the hospital, what do I got, doc? Tell me. Give it to me straight. And the doc gives him this, like detailed, like, technical description, technical explanation. And he's like, okay, is it fatal? And the doctor says, indigestion? Only in Mexico.
Boo. Oh,
it was
bad.
That's like your joke?
So I think I've decided when we say what's a bad movie and what's a good movie, I think that you need like a barometer. You need like a moment to say like unequivocally this is a bad movie. And I think what I would say is, so the scenario is you're hungover, it's Saturday morning, you wake up on your couch, you can't find the remote anywhere near you.
How often does this happen to you, Connor?
And this movie is on, right? And I think that that's when you would decide whether it is truly if it's truly a bad movie, you get up and you change the movie despite your current state.
But here's the thing, like
you'll watch
a bad movie in that condition.
I've watched a lot of bad movies. You know,
you'd change it? I wouldn't change it.
You would not change this? Nope.
I wouldn't change it.
Would you pick up another beer and keep drinking?
Yeah.
10 o'clock on a Saturday.
I mean,
that's why we have all this breakfast IPA. Yeah.
Breakfast double IPA? Yes, probably.
Yeah, so I think across the board,
why is Rob Schneider in all of these films?
Rob Schneider is a leader in the clubhouse in bad football movies.
It's like, and we haven't even
on
this
category.
Boy.
Oh, there you go, yeah.
Wow. So yeah, I think we're unanimous on this, but thank you to the viewers who brought this to our attention.
Thank you, Twitter, I think. We learned something, right?
We learned
a lot about filmmaking.
We did learn a lot about filmmaking. We learned a lot about good beer. Thanks again to Double Nickel Brewing, to Magnify Brewing, and we'll see you guys. So next week, a special episode. We have a crossover between one of our other podcasts, Most Valuable Podcast, which you should also listen to. I'm not going to spoil the surprise yet, but one of the most quintessential football movies of the 1990s coming next week. So be sure to download, subscribe, leave a review, and thanks again.